Welcome to Career Tools. Today's topic, Resume Update 2011, Part 1. Here we go. Every year since, ever since we put out our original resume guidance, right? We've given folks an update, and this year's no different, right? We give more information about market conditions and changes we're seeing in resumes and all that kind of stuff. Now, you correct me if I'm wrong, but the basics, right? Resumes needing to be one page, telling the reader what you did and how well you did it, right? Those kind of things, they don't change. We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah. In fact, this is the one cast where I think we could legitimately, I'm sorry, the one recurring cast once a year, one out of every 52, that we become timely rather than timeless. Although we're often repeating things just with different flavors based on what we see happening in the resume marketplace. We think it's valuable. Look, I would be fine for the rest of my life never putting out a cast that's timely rather than timeless. But Wendy and I get a lot of questions about resumes. People are constantly asking questions about resumes of media outlets, and you know, it's a buzz. People are thinking about changing jobs. They're thinking about getting a better job, and so they know they have to put together a resume, and they know they don't know what to do, and so they ask questions, and then people get quoted on it, and of course, often the quotes are really, really bad. And in the last 10 years or so, the advent of digital media is such that there have been different ways of delivering video, delivering resume, and so it's, you know, people ask a lot of questions, and people listen to the wrong guidance all the time. And so we want to stay current. We don't want people thinking, well, gee, it's, you know, they didn't answer this question from 5 years ago in their cast. Well, we did. We said, we basically said, do it exactly this way. And of course we have the resume workbook, which you get all of our advice in incredibly excruciating detail. I don't even remember how many pages it is. It may be 50 pages long, saying do exactly this way with example after example after example. And for Wendy and I, in a way, this cast is both the most fun and the most frustrating cast that Wendy writes all year for Career Tools. Basically, Wendy and I, sort of jokingly, but also as part of our job, we email back and forth throughout the year the oh my God, bad, terrible things that we find that are being recommended in interviews, in resumes.
Yeah, every once in a while I see an email from either you or Wendy that starts off with OMG. It's like, oh, this is going to be a good one.
Yeah, and it's just, you can't even imagine the stupid things people say. And, you know, I think part of this is, I've alluded to this a couple times before, if you're a reporter and you don't know anything about career, you've never interviewed thousands of people, you've never had to scan thousands of resumes and so on, you don't know how to evaluate the answer of someone, right? If you're a political reporter and somebody says, well, the president has the right to pass laws, then you know from school that the answer is no, he doesn't. And so this person who's saying that is clearly not a smart person. If you don't know anything about the recruiting business and the interviewing business and the resume business, when someone says, well, we're recommending you do this, the Wall Street Journal or Fortune or anybody else or some newspaper doesn't know to say, that's just dumb, right? And we get resumes that are mind-boggling. And what it boils down to is when something is so bad that it becomes funny, that's the fun part for us. And then, unfortunately, we realize that good people, smart people who have something to contribute, they're reading that guidance that may, in fact, be pithily distributed, pithily said, and then they're producing resumes that follow that guidance. And we get incredibly frustrated that we can't reach more people more quickly and say, no, this guidance you're reading is just wrong.
This year, though, we've seen a lot of guidance. It seems like more than almost ever in terms of bad advice that people are given. So,
yes. Yeah. And you know why? I'll tell you exactly why. Because people who are in the resume business, people who profit from giving advice on resumes, career counselors, career services, job recruiting firms, and so on, who style themselves as experts, who benefit from being quoted as experts, and who see themselves being quoted in the newspaper because they have a public relations firm talking to the media and saying, my person's available to be interviewed for this stuff, they must say something unique. Right. If you just say the same things everybody knows, you're not going to be quoted. But what's more, they believe that because the market is bad in 2011, that you must be distinctive, that you must try to stand out. This is inherently false. This is a falsehood, and it will be a falsehood for a long time. There are rare exceptions, and because they're dramatic, people talk about them, and then someone tries a pale imitation of something dramatic, and it doesn't work. And so I just have to say that often the stuff that gets printed is the stuff that's particularly egregious. And you might say to yourself, well, gosh, Mark, all this digital media, all this sort of stuff, you would think there would be some changes. And yes, resumes are no longer mailed, and so the quality of the paper doesn't matter, when it actually did used to matter. And the font or the typeface sometimes matters, sometimes doesn't, depending upon somebody who's either reading it digitally or printing it out. Certain fonts print or are viewed differently digitally. But fundamentally, the mistake that people make is your resume, unless it's particularly weird on either end of the spectrum, unique in a good way or unique in a bad way, the issue is it being read. And resume reading, the act of evaluating a resume, is fundamentally the same. It's in the mind of the recruiter. And if you don't have the right stuff for a job, the fact that something clever you do gets your resume in front of somebody will not do you that much good. This is not a marketing problem. It is a content, it is a quality of product problem. And too many people spend too much time marketing themselves by making their resume interesting, different, creative, clever, whatever, without focusing on sticking to the knitting. And you end up with something that may in fact be cute or may in fact get a chuckle, but there's no there there. There's a great story. I'm reading a book about one of the first Google employees, and he makes a comment as a marketing person. He admits that he made a mistake in a meeting as they were getting Google off the ground when Yahoo and AOL were the two big kahunas in the internet business. This was what, you know, late 1990s. And they were saying that the portals ran everything. And so Google's search algorithm was sort of a new idea. And this person was quoted as saying in a meeting, well, this is going to be a marketing problem. We're going to have to market ourselves to get our name out there so that people can learn about us, so that people can really realize how much better we are. And one of the two founders said in the meeting, he said, if we can't win on quality, we shouldn't win. Now, of course, both of the founders, Brin and Page, are both, you know, deep intellectual, really, really smart engineers, very, very analytical people. And so they believe their idea, the concept of their idea, was so high quality that it ought not to be necessarily tainted by marketing. The danger is too many people are trying to make a resume about marketing. It's not a marketing problem. It is a quality of product problem. It will get read. If you have a quality product, it will get looked at. And yes, it is true that if you have a quality product and you do something slightly different, you might, in fact, catch that 1% attention that allows your resume to get read as opposed to being in the slush pile. The problem with that is it's exceptionally rare, and the number of factors that go into it are impossible to predict.
Good. Now, we saw a lot of bad advice this year, so we can't talk about all of it. So,
right.
So out of the dozens and dozens of bad advice, what did you pick for this week to talk
about? So we've got recommendations that essentially address mistakes that people make. Number one is you've got to include a cover letter, folks. You must do it. I think there are a lot of people who believe that, you know, okay, it's digital and I'll just send them the resume. They can see the resume right away. Nope. The cover letter is a distinctive opportunity, as we've been saying all along, a distinctive opportunity to distinguish yourself, and you need to learn how to do it. Number two, there is a trend going around about for not having an objective statement, but advisors are saying, no, we call that an executive summary. You don't put an executive summary on your resume, period. End of story. Okay. Number three, you still got to be using Microsoft Word. I don't know why, but there's all kinds of other forms and we'll talk about it, but you've got to use Microsoft Word. And the core of great resumes, it's not a marketing problem. It's a quality of content problem. Achievements are everything on your resume. The bullets that show your achievements are everything. You've got to get them right.
Good. So a little background, folks, on why we want to talk about including a cover letter, because we've seen several places in, you know, popular press, et cetera, where folks have been given guidance saying that hiring managers, they have too many applications, and so they don't have time to read the cover letters. And so the guidance goes on to suggest then that you don't send a cover letter, you know, just to...
Yeah, no. Wrong.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just wrong. No logic, right? First, you don't know whether the hiring manager you're sending your application to, you don't know whether he or she has too many resumes or not. PricewaterhouseCoopers annual survey of CEOs found that availability of key skills was in the top five concerns expressed by the people surveyed. And by the way, the others were the recession, the economy, public deficit, overregulation. Talent shortages exist in skilled and key managerial roles. Forget how long the hiring manager may or may not have to read your resume. You can't affect that, folks. You can't change that with marketing, okay? Make it the most compelling resume you can. Now, if the manager does have a stack of 100 applications for his single junior programmer role, that makes your cover letter actually more important, not less. The cover letter is designed actually to pique the manager's interest and encourage him or her to read your resume. Interesting. One of the things we learned in sales, I learned in sales years ago, was the difference between a feature and a benefit. A car, for instance, has a bumper. The bumper is a feature. The benefit of the bumper is it reduces your risk of injury and the damage, the cost of repairing your car in the event of an accident. A feature is a thing. A benefit is what it does for the buyer. Your resume, it has a bunch of features on it because there are things you've done in the past. The cover letter turns those features into benefits by talking about how what you have done and what background you have benefits the company that may be hiring you, okay? Think of the cover letter as a bit like a preview at the movies where, you know, all the previews of the movie show you some of the good lines in the movie and they make you laugh and they have the car chases and the explosions and everything else. It looks very exciting for 30 seconds. The best bits of the movie make it into the preview. And that's what your cover letter is to your resume. It highlights the key things. Now, you can't just repeat the highlights and say, I've done these things. You've got to show that you've thought about the job you're putting your resume in for, and you're saying, I believe I could help you with your interest in X based on what research you've done about the company, because I've done X, Y, and Z before. Or your need for someone who is a team leader is satisfied by my experience with this and this and this that you'll find further explained in my resume. You're turning your features in your resume into benefits for this particular person. You're saying to them, this is why you should look at my background because it fits with what you're looking for. Folks, managers are not looking for your features. They're not looking for someone who did X in the past. They're not. They might say that, but what they're really looking for is the outcome of that in the future, which is to say, you should be able to do, I want you to be able to do this in this job working for me. And then they try to translate that into something that works for you. Hey, I'm looking for a guy who has this kind of experience. Well, in order for your resume to be really effective, you've got to have that kind of experience, but then you have to tell them, and here's why it fits what you say you're looking for. The cover letter translates your features into benefits, particularly if the benefits that you provide line up really, really well, which is your marketing opportunity here, really, really well with the advertisement or the job description that you've looked at. Basically, in our cover letter guidance, we recommend you spend the second paragraph of the note telling the hiring manager how your experience fits her top three or four or five requested skills. And it only takes like 5 seconds to read it. And the message she gets when she reads that cover letter is, this person knows what I want and fits my needs. That's so important. This person considered my needs and sent me something that helped me. Resumes are not thought of as something that help hiring managers. They're thought of as a list of your features. Benefits are the things that help the hiring manager, not features. And something else too. It also says this person can write a full sentence, make sense, and be persuasive. You come across as a professional. Most people know how to write a resume, or they can wrestle one into the ground. And quite frankly, out of 100 resumes that I get, 90 are bad. 8 are acceptable, and 2 are good. And at a distance to most people, they all look the same. There's, you know, take that back, 20% of them look weird, and another 20% of them have errors. But you don't see those errors at first glance when you look at the metadata. But if you put a cover letter on there, you've made the translation from features to benefits, and the hiring manager is now positively predisposed to look at your resume. And something else, If, in fact, a hiring manager gets your resume and you've prepared for job X and he is, in fact, it's incorrectly in front of him and he's looking for job Y, the moment he reads your resume, he's going to go, oh, this guy's not for me. And he's going to set it aside, which, believe it or not, is actually a good thing. Right? Because you've prepared your resume for that particular job, for a particular job, and he's not looking for that particular job. Since you're not applying for every job in the world, you've got to assume that it's fair. Obviously, you're not. Therefore, the hiring manager is similar to you and that he's not looking at every single resume in the world. Okay? And so a good cover letter says to the hiring manager, hey, so far, so good. And he says to himself, or she says to herself, let's take a look at that resume. She's already saying yes in her head. She's now looking for confirmation that you are the fit you say you are when they look at your resume. They're not doing what most managers do with resumes, which is looking for reasons to rule you out. The cover letter puts them in a positive frame of mind if they decide to read your resume. And no manager looks at the cover letter and goes, I'm not going to read that. They don't just turn right to it. They take a moment. They read it. They don't consider that a whole lot of extra time.
Okay, you haven't convinced me yet, because look at, just think about my resume. I've got a lot of experience, a lot of great achievements with great results. So my resume should stand on its own. I don't need a cover letter.
Yeah, okay, fine. Good luck with that, right? It should. I love that word should. It makes my job so much easier. Yeah. If only we could wave our magic wand of should and everybody would just do what we think they should, right? But look at it from his perspective. Say you don't send a cover letter. The hiring manager picks up your resume. There's no introduction. There's no context. There's no direction as to what to find. And if you're like 40% of the resumes I get that really aren't that good, they immediately go, this is not a great resume. You know, she probably looks at the format rather than the information, because it is much easier to criticize format than the information. Or even put more precisely, it's much easier to criticize format than to analyze the information. And they start to draw conclusions. And the early conclusions are negative.
Well, that's not good for me, because I tend to value substance over style. So,
yeah,
maybe I don't want to work for this person anyways.
Yeah. And by the way, marketing people, if you're thinking my marketing, you know, because I'm going for a marketing job, I should really work on the marketing. Nope. Marketing people are just like everybody else when they look at resumes. Oh, they might be a little bit more open to a little bit of cleverness, but your cleverness is so delicately balanced on the head of the pin. The chances of it really paying off are so small. Now, mind you, the Wall Street Journal reporter, the Fortune reporter, the Time Magazine reporter, the Business Week reporter, they're going to mention the manager who says, well, I did get one resume once that had a cigarette hole burn in the middle of it, or a burn in the middle of it, and says, I'm on fire for your company, and thought that was kind of cute and ended up hiring the guy. I promise you, that quote is going in the article. What doesn't get people to read the articles in the Journal or the Times or, you know, the Globe and Mail is an article that says, yeah, pretty much what I'm looking for is a well-formatted resume with specific responsibilities and detailed bulleted accomplishments that align closely with what I'm looking for. I'm sorry. That is true 98% of the time, and it never gets in popular media. And so where else are people going to get information about resumes? Well, they might get it from their friend and then discover, well, their friend got hired by another friend and the resume really was kind of an afterthought. And, oh, can I see your resume? Well, it's a couple of years old. It's really not that good. Yeah. And so, unfortunately, people get bad ideas about resumes, right? You've got to include a cover letter always. If you email your resume, use the email, the body of the email you're sending, as the cover letter and set it out in the same way. If you complete an online application, use the additional information box every single time as your cover letter opportunity. Now, let's say something else here, okay? We've given you the guidance about cover letters. Let's share with you a painful truth. All those people who say you have to pander to the hiring manager, taking less than a minute to read your resume, are helping you trying to spare your feelings. Okay. Resumes don't get rejected because hiring managers don't have time to read them. They don't. Hiring managers are human like you. They know that resumes are personal. They respect that. They read them with respect, folks. They're not machines. Resumes get rejected because you don't sell your experience and your accomplishments, because you don't get them thinking yes before they look at the actual resume, because you leave spelling and grammar errors on them, because you mix up responsibilities and accomplishments in your bullets, and so therefore all of your bullets are seen as responsibilities, meaning you don't have any accomplishments and that's not somebody I want to hire, and you don't fit the role, or there's somebody better than you. Stop letting yourself off the hook by blaming the hiring managers and making it a marketing solution, and start doing everything you can to get the job you want by having a totally solid resume that follows our guidelines. The guidelines are free, folks. The resume podcast is free, and putting a cover letter on it, which is where you do your features to benefits marketing.
Good.
We're the only people that should say that. And you know what? That's not dramatic. And nobody else is going to talk about it, but that's how the system works.
Exactly. So, folks, cover letter.
There okay. You go.
So let's talk about the next one, because this one was surprising. I remember about a year ago. I'd seen it mentioned. I was reading some advice from somebody, and they start off their guidance by saying, hey, look, remove the objective statement. I was like, oh, finally, somebody,
yes.
Right? That's right.
They
finally see it as the same way we do, right? Which is like context-less, unhelpful piece of fluff that nobody finds useful.
And it's always full of vague phrases that people think of as cool that literally, if you look at 50 of them, they all have the same phrases: dynamic, forceful, team-based, collaborative, future visioning, people-focused, mission-driven, context-aware, internationally experienced marketing executive.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like adjective hell. It's literally adjective hell. It's awful.
Okay, dude. So I was all excited, right?
Yeah.
And then the very next paragraph, the guy says, we recommend you replace it with an executive summary. It's like, oh my God. And what do you think those executive summaries look like?
Yeah, it's literally like, you know, by the way, I'm going to take a picture of the entire of North America, and then I'm going to take that picture, a 3x5 photograph of all the entire continent of North America, and then I'm going to scope it down into a little teeny 20x30 pixel representation of it. Look, your resume is already an executive summary of your life. You can't tell them everything about you. It's only one page. You've been alive for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. The resume is the executive summary. You don't need to waste part of your executive summary with an executive summary of the executive summary. It just doesn't make any sense at all, right? Your resume is short enough already. It's one page long. There are exceptions. They're rare for more senior executives. Saying in an executive summary, I got to tell you, this is one of my top five most hated things to read in an executive summary: proven executive track record of sales success. You know what? That is what's called puffery. We're talking about features and benefits and sales, right? Folks, some of you know I'm a golfer. Have you ever noticed how all the golf ball commercials say there's no ball longer? Well, you know, this is not actually puffery. Puffery is a legally protected form of speech where you can make your thing, the product that you're recommending, sound a little bit better than it is. And it's recognized as being marketing puffery. You're puffing up the thing you're talking about. It's the quote, greatest thing in the world, unquote. Right? Well, everybody knows inherently that a new kitchen device is not the greatest thing in the world, but at least in the U.S., that kind of puffery is legal because, in part, people know it's false, okay? They understand that it's just hype. It's a person pretending to be right. Very, very excited about the product.
They know you're lying.
Yeah. Okay. But look, when you say puffery is an extension of features and benefits. Features and benefits is classic sales and marketing discussion. It's classic sales and marketing vocabulary. Puffery is the going beyond features and benefits. It's marketing talk to the extreme. A line like proven executive track record of sales success is literally a phrase that says, I'm telling you how good I am. Okay. The problem with that is that we don't want you to tell us how good you are. We want to read how good you are by your past performance. We don't care that you have a proven, that you say you have a proven executive track record. We want to see the track record. Okay. The statement proven executive track record doesn't demonstrate anything. 15 accomplishment bullets with increases of year on year sales, that demonstrates something. Man, now you've proven to me. And by the way, you might be saying, well, I don't have room for all 15 of them. Trust me, 5 will be enough. And those five bullets will show more than just proven track record. They'll show that you achieve goals. They'll show that you overcome things. They'll show that you've done it over a long period of time. If it were okay to do an executive summary, everybody would just write a puff piece about themselves. It was one gigantic long paragraph full of all kinds of adjectives, thinking that they're doing themselves any good. We don't want you to say what you've done. We want you to show what you've done. We want to see the actual features. And we want to turn them into benefits in our mind. And features are the things you've done in the past. Don't waste space, or frankly, the time and energy that it takes to craft three or four lines which sound good and say nothing that your resume already does not. And your resume, if you follow the guidance that we've already given repeatedly, will say everything it needs to say about you. That, your history, your background, your proven track record of accomplishments, not said, but actually shown, is what will make you stand out from the crowd, particularly if you've already put a cover letter in front that makes them be looking for those positives when they look at your bullets of accomplishments.
Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.